Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, certified coach, and energy master, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and wellness in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to help you shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Power Your Life, and I'm so glad that you're tuning in. And many people have read 50 Shades of Grey, the three volumes, and that movie came out just a while ago. That was a big craze for a lot of people. But more importantly, it awakened or gave people permission to experiment, to take a look at their intimacy, their sexuality in many new ways. And we're going to explore that, not necessarily 50 Shades, but just the challenges, the issues, the intimacies of sex esteem, of sensuality, and of sexuality. And who better to do that than Sari Cooper, who is a certified sex therapist, a relationship coach, and a media expert. She has 20-plus years of experience working with both individuals and couples on their relationships, workplace challenges, and sexual problems. Sari is a regular on CBS This Morning, and she gives the latest insights into the challenges and sexual problems that people have, both younger and older. She writes a blog on her website and offers Skype coaching in addition to her in-person therapy sessions. Think about you. Think about your sexual relationships. And when I say sexual relationships, I'm also talking about your relationship with yourself. So welcome, Sari Cooper. You've been on my TV show, and I love what you have to say.
Oh, thank you for having me. We had a great time on your show. That was a lot of fun, and I'm so glad to come back and be on the radio show.
Me too. So firstly, I love this topic that you do seminars on, and it's called sex esteem. So I think that being intelligent about our sex, and we're going to delve into that a little bit more, is really important. But in your mind, and when you teach this, what does sex esteem mean, and why is it important?
Right. So sex esteem is a phrase I've coined for my workshops, my coaching sessions, and it's a combination of confidence, composure, and consciousness. And what that means is, in order to have confidence, you have to have knowledge. You have to read, you have to explore, you have to understand your own body, your partner's body, and what it is that you would like in a sexual relationship. That's the first thing.
You know, I think that's important because you said being conscious, which means really being aware. And a lot of that is also, like you always say, is being aware of what your needs are and being able to communicate them. Why do people have such difficulty with that, Sari?
You know, I think that we are a culture, and the American culture I'll talk about, that is very Puritan. And there is a lot of shame and embarrassment around sex. It's not discussed in most families. And, you know, that stays with you when you become an adult or you become sexual. And so we're not really taught how to articulate what it is that we're feeling, what we sexually want, what we erotically want, what we emotionally want. And so I do feel like there's a lot of embarrassment and shame that even long-term couples have with one another.
And also with themselves, right? I mean,
I would agree. I mean, if you are born and grow up in a family that doesn't even teach you the names of your genitals, right, you're getting the message that that area of your body is off limits, and even to yourself. And certainly many people have had the experience of maybe self-pleasuring or masturbating when they were younger. And if they were, quote-unquote, caught, they would start to feel embarrassed or shamed by their parents or whoever it was who, you know, walked in on them, if you will.
You know, you've recently launched, and I want to congratulate you on this, you've launched a show called Sex Esteem on YouTube. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what I wanted to do is create a show that educates people, but in a fun way. So I really am all for getting as much education, information out there to people as possible. So it's a way of learning without feeling like you have to put yourself out there as much. And so I interview people. I have just themes that I'm going to be presenting on a quarterly basis. I sometimes will incorporate skits that are kind of funny to exaggerate a point, but really make people laugh and be relaxed around the subject of sex. And my first show was about power exchange, which, you know, in anticipation of 50 Shades coming out, I thought that'd be a good topic to discuss.
So what do you mean by power exchange? I love how you coin things.
Yeah. Well, you know, power exchange is anything from, you know, one person leading the other person in a sexual connection to, you know, one person, you know, tying another person up, all the way to, you know, the extremes of what, you know, people saw or read about in 50 Shades, which is more dominance and submission. But power exchange is usually a part of any sort of sexual scenario because generally there's someone who's the initiator, and sometimes people share the power. You know, one person's on top, another person, you know, changes the position. That's all an expression of one's power.
You know, I agree, and power exchange is in pretty much every relationship, whether it's a work relationship, a sexual relationship, any kind of intimate relationship, a friendship. And oftentimes, historically, women have been taught that they shouldn't be the one initiating anything. They need to wait for their partner to do that first, and maybe, I'm not even sure why, I guess it's in bad taste. I mean, I'm not even sure how we came to be that way. But what are your views on that?
So I think there's oblique power, and then there's very obvious power. In other words, they did this study several years ago in which they were, you know, studying sort of mating rituals in a bar. And, you know, most people would say that in a heterosexual bar, men are the ones to initiate contact with a woman. They'll approach, they'll start talking. But what they don't see is the nonverbal communication that very frequently occurs where a man may look over at a woman or a woman may look at a man, their eyes connect for a minute. She gives some sort of nonverbal sort of signal that she might be interested in him, either a smile or a flirtatious look, and then he comes over. So in that exchange, actually, she's the one who's initiating it, but it's not obvious. It's oblique. It's flirtation. It's nonverbal. So I think that women don't realize how much power they have, first of all. And secondly, power can be used in all sorts of ways to create more fun and excitement and eroticism. The other thing I would add is I think power outside the bedroom is different than power inside the bedroom.
So explain that a little bit.
Well, I think power in the bedroom, I think I have clients and who can sometimes get confused or get upset if they feel like someone's dominating them in the bedroom in a way that they feel dominated outside the bedroom. Meaning, how can I say, just because, you know, outside the bedroom would be an example of that would be someone controlling the finances. The person who's in charge of the finances makes all the decisions and doesn't, you know, consult with their partner around how are we going to make a decision on how much we're going to spend on something. That's a dominance that is a political and economic issue and certainly an emotional issue in a relationship. Inside the bedroom, power is really a play tactic. And I think sometimes people feel like if they submit, quote unquote, or they play the submissive in the bedroom, they are somehow giving up control outside the bedroom, and they feel badly about it, and they feel embarrassed or ashamed. And I really say to people, the bedroom, or wherever you're having some sort of erotic scene, is a play space. It's an imaginary place. It shouldn't be and isn't politically driven.
So people, especially women, need to feel comfortable that what's going on in their sexual play, their sexual pleasure with their partner, doesn't necessarily dictate what's going to happen in other areas of their relationship. And I think I think what's so important, and you and I talked about this on the Power Your Life TV show too, and this is something that I know you feel very strongly about as I do, is that communication is key. So even in a bedroom, if that power play is something that you're not comfortable with, I think it's so important to express it, as well as when it's out of the bedroom and you were talking, using an example of finances and control of that, that needs to be discussed too.
Exactly. And so I always tell people to discuss sex in a way that is without criticism or value, as if it's something you're going to eat. For instance, you know, if someone doesn't like spaghetti with red sauce, they just don't like it. Nothing they can convince them. I have a kid like that. Doesn't eat red sauce. It hasn't changed over the years. So the same would be true for a sexual scenario. So if someone really doesn't want to be, you know, spanked, it's just not their thing. In fact, it ruins their erotic thrill. It turns them off in the middle of a scene. And the other person loves to spank, then you have to sort of say, you know, I'm sorry, it's kind of off the menu. But if you feel like there's some things that you've never tried before, but you'd be curious to try them without sort of committing to doing it for the rest of your life kind of thing, then you can just say, you know, I'd be interested to learn more about it, watch a video about it, you know, see it in a movie, I'd be interested to learn more, not committing yes or no.
And maybe even
that's an equitable conversation.
Right. Again, no, I think it's important. And maybe even experimenting and then making that decision. Now, we're here where it gets a little bit complicated in making a choice about spaghetti with red sauce, which is going to use your example, versus sex, is there's another person involved who has an ego, who has feelings, and so that dance, and I call it a dance because it is kind of back and forth, really needs to be worked out. So what if one partner, well, we'll use your scenario, what if one partner wants to try something and that's a male, and the other partner is a female and backs off, and her partner feels wounded or feels that he's not being a good sexual partner? How do we work that through?
Well, I agree with you. Communication is a dance. And by the way, in my former life, I was a professional dancer and choreographer, so I love that motif and that metaphor. This is the thing. You have to say it in a non-shameful way. You can say, you know, I know this is your thing and you really get off on it. I just don't, it takes away from my experience and it just doesn't do it for me. And then to see if there's any room to negotiate. For instance, so let's say, you know, you don't want to be the spanky. It's not your thing. But you know that your partner just gets off on it, loves it to death, you know. Would you be willing to watch a movie scene or an erotica scene that has spanking in it because you know it turns them on? Or would you be willing to talk about it? you know, would he be willing to be spanked by you? Would you be willing to do it? I mean, you know, expand it and see if are there any places in which you can incorporate it in other ways. Be creative about it.
You know, I like the fact that you said be creative, because whatever goes on, and it is between two people, it is a decision based on a couple that is based on their trust of one another. But whatever goes on needs to really be experimented and really feel safe. So not only is it about communication, but I believe that it's also about being able to let go a little bit and feeling comfortable with that sense of trust that you can do that and there's no damage or ramifications in other aspects of your relationship or your life.
Exactly. And that's where that boundary comes in between, you know, the saying, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens in your love life, in your sex life, stays in your sex life. It shouldn't be this, you know, you get a consequence and someone's going to be angry with you and take it out on you if you don't participate in a certain activity. I do think that a problem that I see at times in my office is when you might be mismatched sexually. So if some people have a real sense like they just have to be tied up or be, you know, have a certain kind of play that they like that turns them on, that's just outside of, let's say, the vanilla realm, and they're willing to do vanilla, but they really need some other things to go along, some kink related things, and their partner just can't expand, stretch to really participate in that in any way. Sometimes, you know, a couple has to really deal with that in a very pragmatic, honest, authentic, non-judgmental way.
So what happens if they're matched in other areas? They're matched in terms of personality, in terms of interests, in terms of their values regarding kids and life and all other kinds of things. But there's that mismatch, as you say, in the bedroom. Can it be rectified?
I think on a case, I've seen it work out in different ways. Sometimes couples stay together and they're very creative about ways in which one person can satisfy their interests without endangering endangering the relationship. You know, they create a new contract. I'm coming out with a blog soon about people who have non-monogamy contracts. And there's a woman who wrote a book called The Wild Oats Project, where she and her husband decided to create a non-monogamy contract. And I did an interview with her, and I'm going to be writing about that. But so I work sometimes with couples who decide to have non-monogamy contracts, but are very, very detailed and have, you know, good boundaries around it in order to safeguard the main relationship. And then, you know, I have other people who decide to start in on another activity they've never done in their life, either of them, that kind of fulfills that erotic zone that one partner had. Whether it's, going to strip clubs together, or going to, sex clubs together and being voyeurs, or incorporating more porn into their relationship, which they'd never done, or fantasies. I think there's a way to incorporate something if you're creative and open enough. And then there are people I've also seen break up in my office because as much as they love each other, they're kind of best friends, and they just realize like they just are so different in their appetites and their desires that they couldn't find a middle ground. And they end up living and feeling like they're brother and sister.
And that's okay. I mean, you know, it's not like there's a judgment on it. It just is what it is. What are some of the other problems that you encounter with couples that come into your office for counseling?
I have a lot of clients who come in who are trying to recover from infidelity when one partner cheats on the other. And that's a longer term kind of work that I do with people, because the first barrier is to go through a period where there's remorse. People, you know, the person who stepped out is making amends. And then there's the rebuilding of trust. And then later on in the work, you have to help them get back into a sex life. That works for both of them.
But that's not necessarily one of the most common challenges that couples face. What are some of the more common ones that couples are fit? So maybe they're not able to communicate themselves with that, or maybe they've reached some sort of impasse whereby they need somebody else to intervene and to help them through that. What would those be?
So one of the other ones that is a very common problem that people come in with is a low level of desire or differential desire between two partners. And that's a very common couple issue, although sometimes people come in individually for that as well. But it's really a couple issue, because while sometimes there are biological or chemical reasons for someone's libido being lowered, whether it is a side effect from medications they're taking, whether it's due to a medical problem like diabetes or heart disease or depression, there are also emotional psychological reasons that can contribute to a low level of desire, including problems, you know, power struggles within the couple, resentments of things that have happened years ago, or just really bad day-to-day communication skills.
So then what happens? What do you do with that? And of course, we, you know, it's probably more case by case situation. But I hear that a lot in terms of somebody has a stronger sex drive in a relationship than the other person, and how do they work it out?
You know, it's like other issues that come up in a relationship, right? You have to negotiate. So I always ask people, given to your own devices, you know, how often would you want to engage sexually, either with your partner or with yourself? And so if they say, you know, 5 times a week is really kind of where my drive is, and their partner is at 1 time a week, then, you know, you ask them, okay, so would you be willing to compromise? And the person who has the low desire is actually in the power position, if you will, because they have to sort of step out of their hormonal or... Pardon?
I said their comfort zone, maybe, right?
Their comfort zone, and be willing to at least enter another space, because it's part of their care for their partner. It's part of their care for their relationship. It's not a power struggle. It's about, we want what's best for our couple. You know, I always tell couples, you know, you as individuals, I'm not necessarily working with you as individuals. I'm working with you. My client is your relationship. That's who I'm trying to help. That's who I'm trying to revive. That's who I'm trying to heal. And
well,
if you too can be as committed to this relationship, almost like it's a third person, then you will say, well, what is it that we have to do to really make this thing thrive?
You know, I think that is essential, because I always say, and I've written about this too, sorry, that there's, there are the two people, and then there's the relationship. And so really there are three, if you will, three people or three dynamics that really need to be addressed. And the relationship has a life and an energy all its own that is contributed by the two people, but it has to be addressed. And oftentimes, like you say, oftentimes very separately. Why is it that we have so much trouble, particularly in this culture, with fantasy? And I think that's really a little bit what 50 Shades of Grey did for people, for women, was open their eyes or their appetite, if you will, for more playful experimentation. But why do we feel so cut off from that? And yet we need it.
We really do. I feel like... again, you know, people have been taught shame very early on, and they you know, one thing that clients always ask me when we work together is this normal? Is this normal? There's a desire to be in this normal range, and I always say, you know, normal is who you, whatever you feel is your normal. In any sort of scientific experiment, the normal is really the most common on a bell curve. But it doesn't mean those on the other extremes of the bell curve aren't normal. They just are less frequent, if you will. And so I think when people are aware of their fantasies, they become kind of shy about them because they think that it's abnormal. You know, so some people, you know, the reason why 50 Shades was so popular is it tapped into women's, a very common fantasy that women have, which is being being dominated. And, you know, in years past, that used to be called a rape fantasy, which, you know, feminists really undid because rape isn't a sexual experience. It's a violent experience. It's a criminal, violent experience. But if we put it in back to our power exchange terms, being dominated is actually a huge fantasy for women. And I think women feel, well, some women feel very split about it because they feel like, wait a minute, I'm a grown woman, I work, I take care of myself, I'm a feminist, I'm independent. Why am I having these fantasies of someone, like, you know, taking control over me? And they're somewhat confused about it.
But again, as you said, it doesn't mean that you're not that powerful woman outside of the bedroom, in the corporation, in your business, with your kids, with, you know, in relationships, but it's about that very special relationship and sexuality that you create with your partner that stands apart from all of that.
I would agree, and I would add that it's also a place to explore other roles, where you have a freedom, and also to balance out maybe the role that you have outside the bedroom. So there are many, many people who have major control and power and make in their outside life, whether it's, you know, taking care of kids or running a corporation or, but what they do is what they want is some balance so that in their leisure life, in their fantasy life, they want to be taken care of. They want to be told what to do. They make so many decisions in their day-to-day life that a vacation for them is someone to tell them what to do.
that's true. So here's another question, because you have kids and we're talking about sexuality and sex esteem, and what is important for us to tell our children so that they grow up, and again, we have to be aware of different age groups and ability to handle this information, but what's the important message to give to our kids so that they grow up feeling that sexuality is healthy and is good?
I think it's important to mention some sort of developmentally correct terms at each stage of the game, so that you're telling your kids information, giving your kids information that is important, that it also sends what we call a meta message, that you're someone that they can talk to about sex and have questions. So a kid asks you at the age of 6, you know, why do girls not have a penis? You're going to answer them, and instead of shutting down the conversation, you're going to say, well, you know, there are two genders, and sometimes there's more than one gender, but in most cases, you know, penises are for boys and vaginas are for girls, vulvas are for girls. So you actually start bringing in the vocabulary early on, and at that stage, they don't have any shame about it, and it's certainly if you're talking about it with composure and confidence, key ingredients of sex esteem, you're passing on the sex esteem to them.
So I'm thinking of a scenario which is a little bit extreme. You do that, and you do that in the right way, and you get a call from school days later that your son or daughter is going around talking, saying all these terms, right, that really are inappropriate in school. What do you do? So I think we have to prepare our kids for that too. That kind of discussion is something that we do privately rather than you go out and talk about it on the playground and shout out words and terms that they're just learning.
Well, you know, I do think it's one thing to act things out of school. It's another thing to use words. I mean, they're words like any other in the English language, as long as they're sharing it in a responsible way. But I do think you have to set it in context. You're right in that you always tell your kids, we have things that we talk about in our family that other families may not feel comfortable talking about. But we're giving you this information because we feel like it's an important part of your education. It's just
like
the same
that.
Way as, you know, a kid says, well, why can't I do X, Y, and Z? You know, so-and-so can go out till 11 o'clock at night. Why can't I? And the answer you give is because, you know, you're not that person's kid. You're my kid. And this is the value that, you know, these are the values that we have and we are teaching you and we ask you to abide by. Same thing for any sort of sexual information.
And I think that's important. I think it's important to create the context, as you say, and to be honest and upfront, because oftentimes children are given misinformation, even about how babies come about,
and
don't have that. And sometimes it's based on religious values, but I think that education, and this is, you know, my personal opinion, I think that education, all kinds of education, is so important so that a child grows up being able to make right decisions because he or she has all the information necessary.
Right. So whether it's from an early age of knowing your body part names to giving kids an expectation of what what you think is the right age for a certain activity. So, you know, we know, kids know, that in most states you can get a driver's permit at 16 and you get your license at 17. So in order to drive a car, you need lessons, right? But no one tells kids, you know, parents generally don't say to their kids ever, unless there's a religious component, you know, which is usually no sex before marriage in many religions, they won't say, well, we think this is actually a good time for you to have intercourse, you know? And it's an important thing that kids need to hear. They may not listen to you, but at least they know the boundary that you are setting, and they can bump up against it as they will. But if you say to a kid, look, you know, our family feels that, you know, sex before marriage is fine, but under these circumstances, and you list them, whether it's certainly, you know, using condoms and safer sex and being on the pill, or you're in love with the person, you really feel strongly you trust this person, you've been in a committed relationship with them for a while, you're above this age, you know, and you have to set that age. Every family is different. Then the kid has all this information about what you and your partner believe in, if you're in a two-parent relationship family. And then they will make a decision based on part of taking that into account. Well, my parents believe that dot, 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 dot. Well, you know, I'm going to take that into account. I'm in a relationship. I'm younger than what they said, but I am in with a long-term relationship. I'm not just hooking up, whatever it is. And in that way, you bring the values into the conversation.
And the values, I think values are really important in the conversation. So how can people find you, listen to your new show, not so new, but it's an important show about sex esteem on YouTube, and find out more about how to get in touch with you. You have workshops, seminars, you have a lot going on, and I know you're in New York. How do they reach you? And you also do Skype with people, which is wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm going to be starting to do more and more Skype coaching with people. My site is Sari Cooper, SariCooper.com. I'm launching a brand new site in probably a week or so, so I'm excited about that. And my show on YouTube is called Sex Esteem, SexEsteem, Sex Esteem, so just type that in. And I'm on Twitter. You could follow me on Twitter at Ask Sari Cooper. And I'm on Facebook. My author page is on Facebook as well. So there are a lot of ways people can keep in touch with me. And with the new site, you're going to be able to sign up for newsletters, which I send out monthly with new information, cutting-edge research. I come out with new blogs all the time. So I would love it if you want to keep in touch with me, sign up on my new site when it gets launched.
Wonderful. I think that's very exciting. So you're going to have two sites, right? You're going to have this your sarietcooper.com as well as this new site?
Well, Sex Esteem at this point is just the show on YouTube, so people can subscribe to that channel, or they can sign up on the Sari Cooper site.
Wonderful. So, Sari, before we go, and this time has gone so fast because you're such a great guest, what do you want our listeners to know?
I want people to think about ways in which they want to grow in their relationships, whether it's emotional communication that they want to improve or how to enhance their sexual and erotic lives, whether it's with themselves or with a person, you know, in a relationship. And I really encourage you to seek out the information, the education that you feel you're lacking in, and to feel more confident that, you know, life is about learning. You know, to be a lifelong learner is to feel vital and to be growing every day. And so that's what I really encourage people.
Thanks so much. And you've been great. It's always a pleasure being with you. Take care and have a blessed day.
Thank you so much, Dr. Joe. I love being on your show.
And I love having you, Sari. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So we've been talking about Sari Cooper, and she had some really very important points. And it's about knowing who you are, being safe in your relationships, knowing what your boundaries are, your values are, and getting comfortable and listening and communicating with one another. If you want to reach me, I'm at drjoannewhite.com, and we also will have the show up as we do every show, and also the Power Your Life TV show is there. Next week, next Wednesday, we are featuring another wonderful guest, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, who is going to talk about the secret to manifesting everything. And that's pretty incredible because we all are interested in manifesting and bringing into our lives what it is we want. And yet oftentimes we kind of get stuck. Well, this is what I want. This is what I'm thinking about. This is what I'm dreaming about. But how do I make it real? How do I make it happen? How do I bring it into my reality? So stay tuned Wednesday, May 13th, noon Eastern, and find out more about manifesting in your life. Also, remember, the reason I call this show Power Your Life is because I believe from the bottom of my heart that each and every one of us has tremendous strength and power and resilience and so many gifts within us that we can share, that we can bring to the forefront for ourselves. So remember, each and every day, when you awaken and when you go to sleep, take a look at your marvelous gifts and have an opportunity to really vocalize to yourself. You don't have to do it aloud, just how very special you are. Thanks so much for joining us and have a blessed week.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the upbeat show to enrich you and grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again and visit docwhite.org for more information and find out how Dr. Joanne can benefit you. Thank you for sharing your day with us and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.